You mean Fort Patriot? He scoffs. You want me to land us in the middle of a Norden air base? Farley is the first out of her seat, almost ripping her buckles apart. She examines the maps with sharp, deliberate motions. Yes, we are completely stupid, Your Highness, she says coldly. She unfolds one map before shoving it under his nose. Not the fort. 9-5 Field. Gritting his teeth against a retort, Cal takes the map gingerly and examines the square of lines and color. After a moment, he laughs outright. What is it? I ask, pulling the map from his hand. Unlike the giant, indecipherable ancient scroll in Julian's old classroom, this map displays familiar names and places. The city of Harbor Bay dominates the south, bordering the ocean coast, with Fort Patriot occupying a peninsula jutting out into the water. A thick brown strip around the city, too uniform to be natural, can only be another stretch of barrier trees. As in Archaon, the Green Warden's creation of strange forests protects Harbor Bay from pollution. In this case, probably from Newtown, the labeled area hugging the barrier trees like a belt, forming a wall around the outskirts of Harbor Bay. Another slum, I realize. Like Greytown, where Reds live and die beneath a sky full of smoke, forced to build transports, light bulbs, air jets, everything and anything the Silvers themselves can't comprehend. Techies aren't allowed to leave their so-called cities, even to conscript to the army. Their skills are too valuable to lose to war, or their own free will. The memory of Greytown stings, but knowing it's not the only abomination of its kind cuts even deeper. How many live in the confines of that slum? Or this one? How many like me, for that matter? I taste bile as it rises in my throat, but swallow hard, forcing myself to look away. I search through the surrounding lands, mostly mill towns, the occasional small city, and dense forest, dotted with a few dilapidated ruins. But 9-5 Field doesn't seem to be anywhere on the map. A secret, probably. Like anything to do with the Scarlet Guard. Cal notes my confusion and allows himself one last chuckle. Your friend wants me to land a black run on a damn ruin, he finally says, tapping the map lightly. His finger lands on a dotted line, the symbol for one of the ancient massive roads of long ago. I saw one once when Shade and I got lost in the woods near the Stilts. It was cracked by the ice of a thousand winters, and bleached white by centuries of sun, looking more like craggy rocks than an old thoroughfare. A few trees grew straight through it, forcing their way up through asphalt. The thought of landing an airjet on one turns my stomach. That's impossible, I stammer, imagining all the ways we could crash and die, attempting to touch down on the old road. Cal nods in agreement, quickly taking the map from my hands. He spreads it wide, his fingers dancing along the different cities and rivers as he searches. With Mare, we don't need to touch down here. We can take our time, refuel the batteries whenever we need, and fly as long as we want, as far as we want. Then, with a shrug, or until the batteries stop holding a charge. Another bolt of panic streaks through me. And how long might that be? He responds with a crooked grin. Black Runs went into use 2 years ago. At worst, this girl's got another 2 on her cells. Don't scare me like that, I grumble. 2 years, I think. We could circle the world in that time. See Prairie, Taraxis, Montfort, Ciron. Lands that are only names on a map. We could see them all. But that is a dream. I have a mission of my own. New bloods to protect, and a kingly score to settle. So then, where do we start? Farley asks. We let the list decide. You have it, don't you? I try my best not to sound afraid. If Julian's book of names was left back in Tuck, then this little jaunt will be over before it's even begun, because I'm not going 1 inch farther without it. Killorn responds instead, pulling the familiar notebook from inside his shirt. He tosses it my way, and I catch it deftly. It feels warm in my hands, still holding on to his heat. Lifted it from the colonel, he says, trying his best to sound casual, but pride bleeds through, small as it may be. His quarters? I wonder, remembering the austere bunker beneath the ocean. But Killorn shakes his head. He's smarter than that. Kept it locked up in the barracks armory, with the key on his necklace. And you... With a satisfied smirk, he pulls on his collar, revealing the gold chain at his neck. I might not be as good a pickpocket as you, but... Farley nods along. We were planning on stealing it eventually, but when they locked you up, we had to improvise, and quickly. Oh, so this is what my few hours in a cell paid for. You can trust me, Killorn said, before he tricked me into a cage. Now I realize he did it for the list, for the new bloods, and for me. Well done, I whisper. Killorn pretends to shrug it off, but his grin gives away how pleased he truly is. Yes, well, I'll take that now, if you don't mind, Farley says, her voice gentler than I've ever heard it. She doesn't wait for Killorn's response and reaches out to grab the chain in a quick, even motion. The gold glints in her hand but quickly disappears, tucked in a pocket. Her mouth twitches a little, the only indication of how affected she is by her father's necklace. No, it's not his. Not truly. The photograph in the colonel's quarters is proof of that. Her mother or her sister wore that chain, and for whatever reason, she isn't wearing it now. When she raises her head again, the twitch is gone, her gruff manner returned. Well, Lightning Girl, who's closest to 9-5? She asks, jutting her chin at the book. We're not landing at 9-5, Cal says, firm but commanding. On this, I have to agree with him. Quiet until now, Shade groans in his seat. He's no longer pale but vaguely green. It's almost comical. He can handle teleporting just fine, but it seems flying does him in. 9-5 isn't a ruin, he says, trying his very best not to be sick. Have you forgotten Naersi already? Cal exhales slowly, rubbing his chin with a hand. There's the beginning of a beard, a dark shadow across his jaw and cheeks. You repaved it. Farley nods slowly and smiles. And you couldn't just say that outright? I curse at her, wiping the self-important grin right off her face. You know there's no extra points for being dramatic, Diana. Every second you waste feeling smug could mean another dead new blood. And every second you waste questioning me, Killorn, and Shade on everything down to the air you breathe does the same thing, Lightning Girl, she says, closing the distance between us. She towers over me, but I don't feel small. With the cold confidence forged by Lady Blonos and the Silver Court, I meet her gaze without a hint of a shiver. Give me a reason to trust you, and I will. A lie. After a moment, she shakes her head and backs away, giving me enough space to breathe. 9-5 was a ruin, she explains, and when curious enough to visit, it just looks like a stretch of abandoned road, 1 mile of asphalt that hasn't broken apart yet. She starts pointing to other ruined roads on the map. It's not the only one. A varied network webs the map, always hidden in the ancient ruins, but close to the smaller towns and villages. Protection, she calls them, because security is minimal, and the reds of the countryside are more inclined to look the other way, perhaps less so now, with the measures in place, but certainly before the king decided to take away even more of their children. The Blackrun and the Snapdragon are the first jets we've stolen, but more will come, she adds with a quiet pride. I wouldn't be sure of that, Cal replies. He's not being hostile, just pragmatic. After they were taken from Delphi, it'll be even harder to get into a base, let alone a cockpit. Again, Farley smiles, completely convinced of her own hard-won secrets. In Norta, yes, but the airfields of Piedmont are woefully underguarded. Piedmont? Cal and I breathe in surprised unison. The allied nation to the south is far away, farther even than the Lakelands. It should be well beyond the reach of Scarlet Guard operatives, Smuggling from that region is easy to believe. I've seen the crates with my own eyes. But outright infiltration, it seems impossible. Farley doesn't seem to think so. The Piedmont princes are utterly convinced that the Scarlet Guard is a Norton problem. Fortunately for us, they're incorrect. This snake has many heads. I bite my lip to keep back a gasp and maintain what little remains of my mask. The Lakelands, Norta, and now Piedmont? I'm torn between wonder and fear of an organization large enough and patient enough to infiltrate not one, but three sovereign nations ruled by silver kings and princes. This is not the simple ragtag bunch of true believers I imagined. This is a machine, large and well-oiled, in motion for longer than anyone thought possible. What have I fallen into? To keep my thoughts from welling up in my eyes, I flip open the Book of Names. Julian's study of artifacts, peppered with the name and location of every new blood in Norta, calms me. If I can recruit them, train them, and show the Colonel that we are not silver, we are not to be feared, then we might have a chance at changing the world. And Maven won't have the chance to kill anyone else in my name. I won't carry the weight of any more gravestones. Cal leans in next to me, but his eyes are not on the pages. Instead, he watches my hands, my fingers, as they sweep through the list. His knee brushes my own, hot even through his ragged pants. And though he says nothing, I understand his meaning. Like me, he knows there's always more than meets the eye, more than we can even begin to comprehend. "Be on your guard," his touch says. With a nudge, I reply, "I know." "Courant," I say aloud, stopping my finger short. "How close is Courant to the 9-5 landing strip?" Farley doesn't bother to look for the village on the map. She doesn't need to. "Close enough." "What's in Courant, Mayor?" Killorn asks, sidling up to my shoulder. He's careful to keep his distance from Cal, putting me between them like a wall. The words feel heavy. My actions could free this man, or doom him. "His name is Nix Marston." 10. The Black Run was the Colonel's own jet, used to skip between Norta and the Lakelands as quickly as possible. It's more than a transport for us. It's a treasure trove, still loaded with weapons, medical supplies, even food rations from its last flight. Farley and Killorn sort the stores into piles, dividing guns from bandages, while Shade changes the dressings on his shoulder. His leg stretches out oddly, unable to bend in the brace, but he doesn't show any signs of pain. Despite his smaller size, he was always the toughest one in the family, second only to Dad, white-knuckling through his constant agony. My breath suddenly feels ragged, stinging the walls in my throat, stabbing in my lungs. Dad, Mom, Gisa, the boys. In the whirlwind of my escape, I've forgotten about them entirely. Just like before, when I first became Marina, when King Tiberius and Queen Alara took away my rags and gave me silk. It took me hours to remember my parents at home, waiting for a daughter who would not return. And now, I've left them waiting again. They might be in danger for what I've done, subject to the Colonel's wrath. I drop my head into my hands, cursing. How could I forget them? I only just got them back. How could I leave them like this? "Mare?" Cal mutters under his breath, trying not to draw attention to me. The others don't need to see me curling in, punishing myself with every little breath. "You're selfish, Mare Barrow. A selfish, stupid little girl." The low hum of engines, once a slow, steady comfort, becomes a hard weight. It beats against me like waves on the Tuck beach. Unending, engulfing, drowning. For a moment, I want to let it consume me. Then I will feel nothing but the lightning. No pain, no memory, just power. A hand at the back of my head takes a bit of the edge off, pushing warmth into my skin to meet the cold. The thumb draws slow, even circles, finding a pressure point I didn't know existed. It helps a little. You have to calm down, Cal continues, his voice much closer this time. I glance out the corner of my eye to see him leaning down next to me, his lips almost brushing my ear. Jets are a little sensitive to lightning storms.
Right.
The word is so hard to say. Okay. His hand doesn't move, staying with me. In through the nose, out through the mouth, he coaches, his voice low and calming, as if he's talking to a spooked animal. I guess he's not entirely wrong. I feel like a child, but I take the advice anyway. With every breath, I let another thought go, each one harsher than the last. You forgot them. In, you killed people. Out, you let others die. In, you are alone. Out. The last one isn't true. Cal is proof of that, as are Killorn, Shade, and Farley. But I can't shake the feeling that, while they stand with me, there's no one beside me. Even with an army at my back, I am still alone. Maybe the New Bloods will change that. Maybe not. Either way, I have to find out. Slowly, I sit back up and Cal's hand follows. He draws away after a long moment, when he's sure I don't need him anymore. My neck feels suddenly cold without his warmth, but I have too much pride to let him know that. So I turn my gaze outward, focusing on the clouds blurring past, the sinking sun, and the ocean beneath. White-capped waves angle against a long chain of islands, each one connected by alternating strips of sand, marsh, or a dilapidated bridge. A few fishing villages and light towers dot the archipelago, seemingly harmless, but my fists clench at the sight of them. There could be a watch atop one of them. We could be seen. The largest of the islands has a harbor filled with boats, navy, judging by their size and the silver-blue stripes decorating their hulls. I assume you know what you're doing? I ask Cal, my eyes still on the islands. Who knows how many silvers are down there, searching for us. And the harbor, crowded with ships, could hide any number of things. Or people. Like Maven. But Cal doesn't seem concerned with any of that. Again, he scratches his growing stubble, fingers rasping over rough skin. Those are the Barn Islands, and nothing to worry about. Fort Patriot, on the other hand, he says, pointing vaguely northwest. I can just make out the shore of the mainland, hazy in the golden light. I'm going to stay out of their sensor range as long as I can. And when you can't? Killorn is suddenly standing over us, leaning on the back of my chair. His eyes dart back and forth, alternating between Cal and the islands below. You think you can outfly them? Cal's face is calm, confident. I know I can. I have to hide my smile behind a sleeve, knowing it will only incense Killorn. Though I've never flown with Cal before today, I've seen him in action on a cycle, and if he's half as good at flying jets as he is at driving that two-wheeled death machine, then we're in very capable hands. But I won't have to, he continues, satisfied with Killorn's silence. Every jet has a call sign to let the forts know exactly which bird's going where. When we get in range, I'll send an old one out, and if we're lucky, no one will think to double-check. Sounds like a gamble, Killorn grumbles, searching for anything to poke holes into Cal's plan, but the fish boy finds himself woefully outmatched. It works, Farley pipes in from her place on the floor. That's how the colonel gets past, if he can't fly between the sensories. Suppose it helps that no one expects rebels to know how to fly, I add, trying to alleviate a bit of Killorn's embarrassment. They're not looking for stolen jets in the air. To my surprise, Cal stiffens sharply. He gets up from his seat in a quick, jarring motion, leaving his chair spinning. Instrument response is sluggish, he mutters in hasty explanation. A lie, poorly made, judging by the dark scowl on his face. Cal? I call, but he doesn't turn around. He doesn't even acknowledge me, and stalks off toward the back of the jet. The others watch him with narrowed eyes, still painfully cautious of him. I can only stare, perplexed. What now? I leave him to his thoughts and go to Shade, still sprawled on the floor. His leg looks better than expected, supported by the well-made brace, but he still needs the curved metal crutch at his side. After all, he did take 2 bullets in Nayersee, and we have no skin healers to put him back together with a simple touch. Can I get you anything? I ask.
Wouldn't say no to some water, he says begrudgingly, and dinner.
Happy to be able to do at least something for him, I collect a canteen and 2 sealed packets of provisions from Farley's stores. I expect her to make a fuss about rationing the food, but she barely spares me a glance. She's taken my seat in the cockpit and stares out the window, enthralled by the world passing beneath. Killoran idles next to her, but never touches Cal's empty chair. He doesn't want to be scolded by the prince, and is careful to keep his hands away from the instrument panel. He reminds me of a child surrounded by splintered glass, wanting to touch but knowing he should not. I almost take a 3rd ration packet, as Cal hasn't eaten since the colonel locked him up, but 1 glance toward the back of the jet stills my hand. Cal stands alone, fiddling with an open panel, putting on a show of fixing something that isn't broken. He quickly zips himself into one of the uniforms stored away on board, a black and silver flight suit. The tattered clothes of the arena and execution puddle at his feet. He looks more like himself, a prince of fire, a warrior born. If not for the distinctive walls of the Black Run, I would think us back in a palace, dancing around each other like moths around a candle. There's a badge emblazoned over his heart, a black and red emblem flanked by a pair of silver wings. Even from this distance, I recognize the dark points, twisted into the image of flame. The burning crown. That was his father's, his grandfather's, his birthright. Instead, the crown was taken in the worst way, paid for with his father's blood and his brother's soul. And as much as I hated the king, the throne, and all it stood for, I can't help but feel sorry for Cal. He's lost everything, an entire life, even if that life was wrong. Cal feels my gaze and looks up from his busy work, still for a moment. Then his hand strays to the badge, tracing the outline of his stolen kingdom. In 1 sharp twist that makes me flinch, he rips it from the suit and tosses it away. Rage flickers in his eyes, deep beneath his calm exterior. Though he tries to hide it, his anger always bubbles to the surface, glinting between the cracks in his well-worn mask. I leave him to his fussing, knowing the inner workings of the jet can calm him better than anything I might say. Shade shifts, giving me space next to him, and I plop down without much grace. Silence hangs over us like a dark cloud as we pass the canteen back and forth, sharing a very strange family dinner on the floor of a twice-stolen Black Run.
We did the right thing, didn't we? I whisper, hoping for some kind of absolution.
Though he's only a year older than me, I've always relied on Shade's advice. To my relief, he nods.
It was only a matter of time before they threw me in with you. The colonel doesn't know how to handle people like us. We scare him.
He's not the only one,
I answer glumly, remembering the averted eyes and whispers of everyone I've encountered thus far. Even in the Hall of the Sun, where I was surrounded by impossible abilities, I was still different. And in Tuck, I was the Lightning Girl, respected, recognized, and feared. At least the others are normal.
Mom and Dad?
I nod, wincing at the mention of them.
Geesa, too, and the boys.
They're true red, so he can't...
He won't do anything to them.
It sounds like a question. Shade takes a thoughtful bite of his rations, a flaky dry bar of compacted oats. It leaves crumbs all over him.
If they'd helped us, it'd be a different story. But they didn't know anything about our escape, so I wouldn't worry. Leaving the way we did...
His breath catches, as does mine. It was better for them. Dad would have helped otherwise. Mom, too.
At least Bree and Trammy are loyal enough to the cause to escape any suspicion. Not to mention neither of them is bright enough to pull something like this off.
He pauses, thoughtful.
I doubt even the Lakelanders would like throwing an old woman, a cripple, and little Geesa in a cell.
Good, I reply, relieved ever so slightly. Feeling better, I brush the flakes of his ration bar off his shirt.
I don't like it when you call them normal, he adds, catching my wrist. His voice is suddenly low. There's nothing wrong with us. We're different, yes, but not wrong, and certainly not better.
We are anything but normal, I want to tell him, but Shade's stern words kill the thought.
You're right, Shade, I say with a nod, hoping he won't see through my feeble lie.
You always are.
He laughs and finishes his dinner in a massive bite.
Can I get that in writing?
He chuckles, releasing his grip on me. His smile is so familiar I begin to ache. I feign a smile for his benefit, but Cal's heavy steps quickly wipe it away. He strides past us, stepping clean over Shade's extended leg, his eyes fixed on the cockpit.
We should be in range soon, he says to no one in particular, but it sends us into action.
Killorn scrambles away from the cockpit, as if shooed away like a little boy. Cal ignores him completely. His focus is on the airjet and nothing else. For now, at least, their animosity takes a back seat to the obstacles ahead.
I'd buckle in, Cal adds over his shoulder, catching my eye as he sinks into his own seat.
He fastens his safety belts with detached precision, tightening each one with quick, hard tugs. At his side, Farley does the same, silently claiming my chair for the time being. Not that I mind. Watching the jet take off was terrifying. I can only imagine what landing looks like.
Shade is proud but not stupid, and lets me help him to his feet.
Killorn takes Shade's other side, and together we make quick work of getting him standing. Once he's up, Shade maneuvers himself easily, getting buckled into his seat with a crush under one arm. I take the seat next to him, with Killorn on my other side. This time, my friend buckles himself in tightly and grips his restraints in grim anticipation. I focus on my own belts, feeling strangely safe when they tighten against me.
You just strapped yourself to a hurtling piece of metal.
It's true, but at least for the next few minutes, life and death depend solely on the pilot. I'm just along for the ride. In the cockpit, Cal busies himself with a dozen switches and levers, preparing the jet for whatever comes next. He squints, averting his eyes from the sunset and its blaze of light. It sets his silhouette on fire, illuminating him with red and orange fingers that could be his own flames. I'm reminded of Naersi, the bowl of bones, even our training matches, when Cal ceased to be a prince and became an inferno. Back then I was shocked, surprised every time he revealed his brutal self, but no longer. I can never forget what burns beneath his skin, the rage that fuels him, and how strong they both are. Anyone can betray anyone, and Cal is no exception. A touch at my ear makes me jump in my seat, jolting against my restraints. I turn to see Killorn's hand hanging in midair, and his face quirked in an amused smile.
You still have them,
he says, gesturing to my head.
Yes, Killorn, I still have ears. I want to bite back.
But then I realize what he's talking about. Four stones, pink, red, deep purple, and green. My earrings. The first three are from my brothers, part of a single set split between Geesa and me. They were bittersweet gifts, given when they conscripted into the army and left our family, perhaps for good. The last one is from Killorn, given on the edge of doom, before the Scarlet Guard attacked Archaon, before the betrayal that still haunts us all. The earrings were with me through everything, from Bree's conscription to Maven's treachery, and each stone feels heavy with memory. Killorn's gaze lingers on the green earring, the one that matches his eyes. The sight of it softens him, wearing down the hard edge he's gained over the last few months.
Of course, I reply.
These will be with me to my grave.
Let's keep the grave talk to a minimum, especially at the moment, Killorn mutters, eyeing his restraints again. From this angle, I get a closer look at his bruised face. One black eye from the colonel, one purpling cheek from me. "Sorry about that," I say, apologizing for both my words and the injury.
"You've given me worse,"
Killorn laughs, smiling. He's not wrong. The harsh, grating hiss of radio static shatters the peaceful moment. I turn to see Cal leaning forward, one hand on the steering instrument, the other clutching the radio mouthpiece.
"Fort Patriot Control, this is BR-18-72, origin Delphi, destination Fort Lancaster."
His calm, flat tone echoes down the jet. Nothing about his voice sounds amiss or even slightly interesting. Hopefully Fort Patriot agrees. He repeats the call sign twice more, even sounding bored by the time he finishes. But his body is all nerves, and he chews his lip worriedly, waiting for a response. The seconds seem to stretch into hours, as we listen, hearing nothing but the hiss of static on the other end of the radio. Next to me, Killorn tightens his belts, preparing for the worst. I quietly do the same. When the radio crackles, heralding a response, my hands clutch the edge of my seat. I might have faith in Cal's flying abilities, but that doesn't mean I want to see them put to the test, outrunning an attack squadron.
"Received BR-18-72,
a stern, authoritative voice finally replies.
"Next call-in will be Concorda Control. Received?"
Cal exhales slowly, unable to stop a grin from spreading.
"Received, Patriot Control."
But before I can relax, the radio continues hissing, making Cal's jaw clench. His hands stray to the steering instrument, fingers tightening around each prong with steady focus. That action alone is enough to frighten us all, even Farley. In the chair next to him, she watches with wide eyes and parted lips, as if she can taste the words to come. Shay does the same, staring at the radio on the panel, his crutch tucked close.
"Storms over Lancaster. Proceed with caution," the voice says after a long, heart-pounding moment. It's bored, dutiful, and completely uninterested in us.
"Received?" This time, Cal's head drops, his eyes half shut in relief. I can barely stop myself from doing the same.
"Received,"
he repeats into the radio. The hiss of static dies with a satisfying click, signaling the end of the transmission. That's it. We're beyond suspicion. No one speaks until Cal does, turning over his shoulder to flash a crooked grin.
"No sweat,"
he says, before carefully wiping away the thin sheen on his forehead. I can't help but laugh aloud at the sight. A fire prince, sweating. Cal doesn't seem to mind. In fact, his grin widens before he turns back to the controls. Even Farley allows herself the ghost of a smile, and Killorn shakes his head, disentangling his hand from mine.
"Well done, Your Highness," Shade says,
and while Killorn uses the title like a curse, it sounds entirely respectful in my brother's mouth. I suppose that's why the prince smiles. Shaking his head.
"My name is Cal, and that's all."
Killorn scoffs deep in his throat, low enough for only me to hear, and I dig an elbow into his ribs. Would he kill you to be a little polite? He angles away from me, avoiding yet another bruise. "I'm not willing to risk it," he whispers back, and then louder to Cal.
"I take it we don't call in at Concorda, Your Highness."
This time I bring my heel down on his foot, earning a satisfying yelp. 20 minutes later, the sun has set and we're beyond Harbor Bay in the slums of Newtown, flying lower by the second. Farley can barely stay in her seat, craning her neck to see as much as she can. It's only trees below us now, thickening into the massive forest that occupies most of Norta. It almost looks like home out there, as if the stilts wait just over the next hill. But home is to the west, more than 100 miles away. The rivers here are unfamiliar, the roads strange, and I don't know any of the villages huddled against the waterways. The new blood Nix Marston lives in one of them, not knowing what he is or what kind of danger he's in. If he's still living. I should wonder about a trap, but I don't. I can't. The only thing pushing me forward is the thought of finding other new bloods, not just for the cause, but for me. to prove I'm not alone in my mutation, with only my brother by my side. My trust in Maven was misplaced, but not my trust in Julian Jacobs. I know him better than most, and so does Cal. Like me, he knows the list of names is real, and if the others disagree, they certainly don't show it. Because I think they want to believe, too. The list gives them hope of a weapon, an opportunity, a way to fight a war. The list is an anchor for us all, giving each of us something to hold on to. When the jet angles toward the forest, I focus on the map in hand to distract myself, but still I feel my stomach drop.
I'll be damned, Cal mutters, staring out the window at what I assume are the ruins-turned runway.
He flips another switch, and the panels beneath my feet vibrate, coinciding with a distinct whirr that echoes through the body of the airjet.
Brace for landing.
And that means what exactly? I ask through clenched teeth, turning to see not sky out the window, but treetops. The entire jet shudders before Cal can respond, smacking against something solid. We bounce in our seats, fingers clenched around our belts, as the momentum of the jet sways us back and forth. Shade's crutch goes flying, hitting the back of Farley's chair. She doesn't seem to notice, her knuckles bone white on the arms of her seat, but her eyes are wide, open, and unblinking.
We're down, she breathes, almost inaudible over the deafening roar of engines.
Night falls quietly over the so-called ruin, broken by distant birdsong and the low whine of the airjet. Its engines spin slower and slower, shutting down after our journey north. The shocking blue tinge of electricity beneath each wing fades until the only light comes from inside the jet and the stars above. We wait, silent, in the hope that our landing has gone unnoticed. It smells like autumn, the air perfumed by dying leaves and the damp of distant rainstorms. I breathe it deeply at the bottom of the ramp. The silence is punctuated only by Killorn's distant snores as he catches a few much-needed moments of sleep. Farley has already disappeared, a gun in hand, to scout out the rest of the hidden runway. She took Shade with her, just in case. For the first time in weeks, months even, I'm not under guard or closely watched. I belong to myself again. Of course, that doesn't last long. Cal hastens down the ramp, a rifle over his shoulder, a pistol on his hip, and a pack dangling from his hand. With his black hair and dark jumpsuit, he could be made of shadow, something I'm sure he plans to use to his advantage.
And what are you doing?
I ask, deftly catching his arm. He could break my grip in a second, but doesn't.
Don't worry, I didn't take much, he says, gesturing to the pack.
I can steal most of what I need anyway.
You? Steal? I scoff at the thought of a prince, and a brute of all things, doing anything of the sort.
At best, you'll lose your fingers. At worst, your head.
He shrugs, trying not to look concerned. And that matters to you?
It does, I tell him quietly. I do my best to keep the pain from my voice. We need you here, you know that. The corner of his mouth twitches, but not to smile.
And that matters to me?
I want to beat some sense into him, but Cal is not Killorn. He'd take my fist with a smile and keep on walking. The prince must be reasoned with, convinced, manipulated.
You said yourself every new blood we save is another strike against Maven.
That's still true, isn't it? He doesn't agree, but he doesn't argue either. He's listening, at least. You know what I can do, what Shade can do. And Nyx might be even stronger, better than both of us, right?
More silence.
I know you want him dead. Despite the darkness, a strange light glimmers in Cal's eyes. I want that too, I tell him. I want to feel my hands around his throat. I want to see him bleed for what he's done, for every person he's killed. It feels so good to say it out loud, to admit what scares me most of all, to the only person who understands. I want to hurt him in the worst way. I want to make his bones sing with lightning until he can't even scream. I want to destroy the monster that Maven is now. But when I think about killing him, part of my mind wanders back to the boy I believed him to be. I keep telling myself he wasn't real. The Maven I knew and cared for was a fantasy, tailored specifically for me. Ilara twisted her son into a person I would love, and she did her job so well. Somehow, the person who never existed haunts me, worse than the rest of my ghosts. He's beyond our reach, I say, both for Cal and for my own benefit. If we go after him now, he'll bury us both. You know this. Once a general and still a great warrior, Cal understands battle. And despite his rage, every fiber of him begging for revenge, he knows this isn't a battle he can win. Yet. I'm not part of your revolution, he whispers, his voice almost lost in the night. I'm not Scarlet Guard. I'm not part of this. I almost expect him to stamp his foot in exasperation. Then what are you, Cal? He opens his mouth, expecting an answer to tumble out. Nothing does. I understand his confusion, even if I don't like it. Cal was raised to be everything I'm fighting against. He doesn't know how to be anything else, even now, alongside Reds, hunted by his own, betrayed by his blood. After a long, terrible moment, he turns around, retreating into the jet. He casts off his pack, and his guns, and his resolve. I exhale quietly, relieved by his decision. He'll stay. But for how much longer, I don't know. 11. According to the map, Courant is 4 miles northeast, sitting at the intersection of Regent's River and the extensive Port Road. It doesn't look like more than a trading outpost, and one of the last villages before the Port Road turns inland, weaving around the flooded, impassable marshlands on its journey to the northern border. One of the 4 great byways of Norta, the Port Road is the most traveled, connecting Delphi, Archeon, and Harbor Bay. That makes it the most dangerous, even this far north. Any number of Silvers, military or otherwise, could be passing through, and even if they aren't actively hunting us, there isn't a Silver in the kingdom who wouldn't recognize Cal. Most would try to arrest him. Some would certainly try to kill him on sight. And they could, I tell myself. It should frighten me to know this, but instead I feel invigorated. Maven, Ilara, Evangeline, and Ptolemus Samos? Despite all their power and abilities, all of them are vulnerable. They can be defeated. We only need the proper weapons. The thought makes it easy to ignore the pain of the last few days. My shoulder doesn't ache so badly. And in the quiet of the forest, I realize the ringing in my head has lessened. A few more days and I won't remember the banshee's scream at all. Even my knuckles, bruised from striking Kaloran's cheekbone today, barely hurt anymore. Shade jumps among the trees, his form flickering in and out of being like starlight through clouds. He keeps close, never appearing out of eyesight, and is careful to pace his teleporting. Once or twice he whispers, pointing out a twist in the deer trail or a hidden ravine, mostly for Cal's benefit. While Kaloran, Shade, and I were raised in the woods, he grew up in palaces and military barracks. Neither prepared him for traversing a forest at night, as evidenced by the loud snapping of branches and his occasional stumbling. He's used to burning a path, forcing his way through obstacles and enemies with strength and strength alone. Kiloran's teeth gleam every time the prince trips, forming a pointed smile. "Careful there," he says, yanking Cal away from a boulder hidden in shadow. Cal easily wrenches out of the fish boy's grip, but that's all he does, thankfully, until we reach the stream. Branches arc overhead from the trees on either bank, their leaves brushing against one another across the gap of water. Starlight winks through, illuminating the stream as it winds through the forest to join the Regent. It's narrow, but there's no telling how deep it might be. At least the current looks gentle. Kaloran is probably more comfortable on water than land, and jumps nimbly into the shallows. He tosses a single stone into the middle of the stream, listening to the plop of rock on water. 6 feet, maybe 7, he says after a moment.
well over my head.
Should we make you a raft?
He adds, grinning my way.
I first swam the capital, a true river, more than 3 times as deep and 10 times as wide, when I was 14. So it's nothing to plunge right into the stream, dipping my head beneath the dark, cold water. This close to the ocean, it tastes faintly of salt.
Killorn follows without question, his long-practiced strokes taking him across the stream in seconds. I'm surprised he doesn't show off more, turning flips or holding his breath for minutes at a time. When I reach the opposite shore, I realize why. Shade and Farley perch on the distant bank, eyeing the water below. Both their faces twitch, fighting smirks or smiles as they watch the prince in the shallows. The stream breaks neatly around Cal's ankles, gentle as a mother's touch, but his face goes pale in the moonlight. He rapidly crosses his arms, trying to hide his shaking hands.
Cal? I ask aloud, careful to keep my voice low.
What's wrong?
Already lounging against a tree trunk, Killorn snorts in the darkness. He zips off his jacket, wringing out the waterlogged material with practiced efficiency.
Come on, Killorn. You can fly a jet, but you can't swim?
He says.
I can swim,
Cal replies hotly. He forces another step into the stream, now up to his knees.
I just don't care for it.
Of course he wouldn't. Cal is a burner, a controller of flame, and nothing weakens him more than water. It makes him helpless, powerless, everything he's been taught to hate, fear, and fight. I remember him in the arena, how he almost died, trapped by Lord Asanos, surrounded by a floating orb of water even he could not burn away. It must have felt like a coffin, a watery grave. I wonder if he thinks of it too. If the memory makes the quiet stream look more like a churning, endless ocean. My first instinct is to swim back, to help him across with my own 2 hands. But that would send Killorn into a laughing fit even Cal wouldn't be able to stomach. And a brawl in the middle of the woods is the last thing we need.
In through the nose, Cal.
When he looks up, our eyes locking across the stream, I give him a tiny supporting nod.
Out through the mouth.
It's just his own advice repeated back, but it soothes him all the same. He takes another step forward, then another and another, chest heaving with each steadying breath. And then he's swimming, paddling across the stream like a massive dog.
Killorn shakes with silent laughter, one hand over his mouth.
I toss a few stones his way. It shuts him up long enough for Cal to reach the shallows again, and he eagerly sprints out of the water. A bit of steam rises from his skin, driven by the heat of his own embarrassment.
It's cold, he mumbles, shaking his head so he doesn't have to look at us.
His black hair sticks, plastered to one side of his silver-flushed face. Without thought, I brush it away, smoothing his hair back into a more dignified style. He holds my gaze all the while, looking pleasantly surprised by the action. Then, it's my turn to blush. We said no distractions.
Don't tell me you're afraid of water, too, Killorn calls across the stream, his voice too loud and gruff.
Farley only laughs in reply, grabbing my brother's wrist. A split second later, they stand next to us, smirking and dry.
They jumped, of course.
Shade scoffs, squeezing my tail of wet hair.
Idiots, he says kindly.
But for the crutch, I'd push him squarely into the stream. My hair has almost dried by the time we reach the rise above Courant. Clouds roll in, covering the moon and stars, but the lights of the village are enough to see by. From our vantage point, Courant looks like the stilts, built at the mouth of the Regent's River, centered on a crossroads. One neatly paved and slightly raised above the salt marsh is clearly the port road. The other runs east to west and turns into a packed dirt road beyond the village. A watchtower on the riverbank points towards the sky, its crown illuminated by a revolving beacon of light. I flinch when it passes over us.
Think he's down there?
Killorn breathes, meaning Nix. He eyes the number of squat houses below, huddled in the shadow of the watchtower. Nix Marston, living, male, born 12-20-271, in Courant, Marsh Coast, Regent State, Norta. Current residence, same as birth. That's all the list said. I repeat from memory, seeing the words in my mind. I leave out the last part, the one that sears like a brand. Blood type, not applicable. Gene mutation, strain unknown. It follows every name on the list, including my own. It's the marker Julian said he used to find these people in the blood base, matching my blood to theirs. Now it's up to me to use that information, and hope that I'm not too late. I squint against the darkness, trying to see through the night. Fortunately, the Regent looks quiet. A black and calm river, and the roads are empty. Even the ocean looks still as glass. Curfew is in full effect, as commanded by the wretched measures still in place. No Navy ships that I can see, and no traffic on the port road. Cal nods, agreeing, and my heart swells. Surely Maven's hunters would not travel without an entourage of soldiers, making them easy to spot. That leaves two possibilities. They haven't come for Nix yet, or they're long gone. Shouldn't be too hot, even with the curfew. Farley's eyes flash over the village, taking in every roof and street corner. I get the feeling she's done this before. Lazy town, lazy officers. 10 coppers says they don't even bother to secure the town records. I'll take you on that, Shade replies, nudging her shoulder. We'll meet you over there, Cal says. He points at a grove of trees half a mile away. It's hard to see in the darkness, surrounded by marsh and tall grass. Perfect cover, but I shake my head. We're not splitting up. You'd rather traipse in there together, with you and me leading the charge? Why don't I just blow up the security outpost, and you can fry any officer who comes your way? Cal replies. He does his best to keep calm, but sounds more and more like an exasperated teacher, like his Uncle Julian. Of course not. Neither of us can set foot in that village, Mayor. Not unless you intend to kill every person who sees our faces. Every person. His eyes bore into mine, willing me to understand. Every person. Not just security, not just soldiers, not even silver civilians. Everyone. Any whisper of us, any rumor, and Maven will come running. With sentinels, soldiers, legions, everyone and everything in his power. Our only defense is staying hidden and staying ahead. We can't do either if we leave a trail. Okay. My voice sounds as small as I feel. But Killorn stays with us. Killorn's eyes flicker, dancing between me and Cal. This will go a lot faster if you don't keep nannying me, Mare. Nanny? I suppose that's what I'm being, even now when he can think, fight, and provide for himself. If only he wasn't so foolish, so dedicated to refusing my protection. Maven knows your name, I tell him. We'd be stupid to think your ID photo hasn't been sent to every officer and outpost in the country. His lips twist into a scowl. What about Farley? I'm a Lakelander boy. Farley answers for me. At least we're on the same page. Boy, Killorn says with a scowl, you're barely older than me. 4 years older, to be precise. Shade answers smoothly. Farley only rolls her eyes at both of them. Your king has no claim over my records, and he doesn't know my true name. I'm only going because everyone thinks I'm dead. Shade pipes in, leaning on his crutch. He puts a calming hand on Killorn's shoulder, but he shrugs him off. Fine, he grumbles under his breath. Without so much as a backward glance, he starts marching toward the grove, quick and quiet as a field mouse. Cal glares after him, a corner of his mouth twitching in distaste. Any chance we can lose him? Don't be cruel, Cal. I reply sharply, heading after Killorn. I make sure to hit the prince as I pass, bumping him with my good shoulder, not to harm, but to communicate. Leave him alone. He follows me closely, dropping his voice to a whisper. Warm fingers brush my arm, trying to soothe me. I'm only joking, But I know that's not true. That's not true at all. And worst of all, I wonder if he's right. Killorn isn't a soldier or a scholar or a scientist. He can weave a net faster than anyone I know, but what good is that when we're catching people, not fish? I don't know what kind of training he received in the guard, but it's little more than a month's worth. He survived the Hall of the Sun because of me, and outlived the massacre of Caesar's Square because of luck. With no ability, little training, and less sense, how can he do anything but slow us down? I saved him from conscription, but not for this. Not for another war. Part of me wishes I could send him home, back to the Stilts, our river, and the life we knew. He would live poor, overworked, unwanted, but he would live. That future, tucked between the woods and the riverbank, is no longer possible for me. But it could be for him. I want it for him. Is it mad to let him stay here? But how do I let him go? I have no answer for either question, and push away all thoughts of Killorn. They can wait. When I look back, meaning to say goodbye to Shade and Farley, I realize they're already gone. A shiver of fear runs down my spine as I imagine an ambush down in Courant. Gunfire echoes in my head, still close in my memory. No. With Shade's ability and Farley's experience, nothing can stop them tonight. And without me, without the Lightning Girl to hide, no one will have to die. Killorn is a shadow through the tall grass, parting green stalks with able hands. He hardly leaves a trail, not that it matters. With Cal crashing along behind me, his broad bulk trampling everything in his path, there's no point in masking our presence, and we'll be gone long before morning, hopefully with Nyx in tow. If we're lucky, no one will notice a missing Red, allowing us time to get ahead of Maven once he figures out what we're doing. What is that, exactly? The voice in my head turns strange. A combination of Julie and Killorn, Cal and a little bit of Giza. It needles, poking at what I'm too afraid to admit. The list is only the first step. Tracking down new bloods? But then what do we do with them? What do I do? Frustration makes me walk faster, until I outstrip Killorn. I barely notice him slowing to let me pass, knowing I want to lead alone. The grove gets closer by the second, shrouded in darkness, and I wish I was alone. I haven't had a moment's peace since I woke up alone in the Mersive. But even that was fleeting, my silence broken apart by Killorn. I was glad to see him then, but now I wish I had that time to myself. Time to think, to plan, to grieve, to wrap myself around what my life has become. We give him a choice. I speak aloud, knowing neither Cal nor Killorn would stray beyond earshot. He comes with us, or he stays here. Cal leans against a nearby tree, his body relaxed, but his eyes stay fixed on the horizon. Nothing escapes his gaze. Do we tell him the consequences of this choice? If you want to kill him, you'll have to go through me, I reply. I won't put a new blood to death for refusing to join up. Besides, if he wants to tell an officer I was here, he'll have to explain why, and that's as good as a death sentence for Mr. Marston. The prince's lip curls. He fights the urge to snarl, but arguing with me will get him nowhere, not now. He's obviously not used to taking any orders but his own. Do we tell him about Maven? That he'll die if he stays? That others will die if Maven tracks you down? I dip my head, nodding. We tell him everything we can, and then we let him decide who and what he wants to be. As for Maven, well, I search for the right thing to say, but those words are scarcer with every passing moment. We stay ahead of him. I guess that's all we can do. Why? Killorn pipes in. Why give him a choice at all? You said yourself we need everyone we can get. If this Nyx guy is half of what you are, we can't afford to let him go. The answer is so simple, and it cuts me to the bone. Because no one ever gave me a choice. I tell myself that I would still walk this path if I knew the consequences. Save Killorn from conscription, discover my ability, join the guard, tear lives apart, fight, kill, become the Lightning Girl, but I don't know if that's true. I honestly don't know. Maybe an hour passed.